Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, November 9th, 2017. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, we talked to brewers at JJ's Brewing Company in Fayetteville, Arkansas. It's a new brewery associated with a successful local restaurant chain whose mission is to take beer business away from the big boys and bring it in-house. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows, our DVDs, brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, at Basic Brewing, and find our show page on Facebook. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. And if you do us the favor of rating us on iTunes and maybe leaving a nice comment, that'll help new listeners find us, they say. Thanks to everybody who's done that already. Some very kind comments. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support, and thanks to everybody who's done so already. And I want to spend a couple of minutes talking about the associate link issue. If you heard this past week's show, you know we were cut off by that certain 800-pound gorilla of an online retailer because we told people that clicking on our associate link would benefit our site. Makes less sense all the time. So I want to thank everybody who's contacted me offering to help with petitions or other efforts to get us hooked back up. But I'm done with that. It's time to move on. I appreciate greatly your thoughts and comments and all that and your concerns. If you're one of the many who clicked on our associate link to the retail giant in the past, don't stop clicking. Just support others with your click. Funnel that support to other people whose work that you like. After hearing about my situation, those people, those podcasts and such may not mention their associate link anymore. But if it's still out there, click on it. Wear that sucker out, especially during the upcoming holiday season. Funnel, 6, 7, or 8% of your purchase away from the giant and toward the little guy or gal. I've also had suggestions that I sign up with the Patreon, which may eventually be a solution. However, I've already got a list of people who have subscribed using our PayPal link at basicbrewing.com/support. So I want to be careful there. I don't want to abandon them or create, necessarily another set of supporters to manage at this point. Also, Patreon takes a bigger percentage of your contribution than PayPal. So I've got to weigh that in there, too. So, this is a process. I don't want to jump into anything too quickly. So I sent out an email to existing regular subscribers, financial subscribers that have subscribed, to have a payment taken out at a regular basis on that support link. I sent an email to them on Tuesday through MailChimp. So if you subscribe and haven't seen that email, look in your junk mailbox and add james@basicbrewing.com to your safe list or whatever you've got to do to have those show up when I send them. But I'm asking subscribers what bonus content you'd like to see on a monthly basis as a benefit to paid subscribers, behind-the-scenes photos or videos, recipes, such as that. Some have responded saying just producing the podcast is enough. They don't need anything extra. But I do want to send out more than just the annual bonus video that we've been doing the past few years as a thank you to those who are stepping up and providing financial support. I've been in contact with new advertisers that you should be hearing soon. I'm in the vetting process now, and I want to make sure that the companies that I talk about are the ones that, meet my standards and that I have experience with. Also, I'm not going to load up the show with ads and make it sound like AM talk radio. so don't worry there. I was brought up in public radio and went over to commercial radio, and so I've been on both sides of the fence, and I like less advertising on programs that I listen to. So anyway, enough of all that. I just wanted to keep you posted on the status of the show, and the show must go on, right? So no worries there. It's and I'm trying I want to be careful in these decisions that I make on how I make any changes to the format because I like the way things are going so far, and you guys that listen on a regular basis seem to like it too. So I don't want to rock the boat too much. I'm planning to post a new video episode on Friday. In this week's show, Steve and I have brewed a couple of Pilsners and fermented at ale temperature. So that was a fun show to do, and also fun to taste the results of our parallel experiments. Spoiler alert, both beers were tasty. Now let's talk about our beloved sponsors, Desiree and Dave of High Gravity in Tulsa. I got an email from High Gravity saying the Blickman Riptide Brewing Pump is back in stock at the store. It's the first pump designed specifically for home brewing, they say. The Riptide pump would pair beautifully with a High Gravity electric brewing system with a Warthog controller. You know, as the weather turns cold and windy and your propane burner has to struggle to maintain a boil outside, think of how nice it would be to have a big electric element inside the kettle with the wort, so you don't lose any of that heat. Electric brewing takes the pain out of propane. Also in that email, the High Gravity folks said the High Gravity Ichabod Pumpkin Ale Ingredient Kit is back, along with High Gravity's Christmas beer for 2017. This year, the Christmas beer is inspired by Trogue's Mad Elf. Both of those are available through December. Yum! You can check out all that at family-owned and operated HighGravityBrew.com. That's HighGravityBrew.com. You know, I love talking to the folks at all the new breweries that are popping up in the Northwest Arkansas area, not just because it's easy for me to get to them. it is that, but it's also an exciting time and place to be right now. Jennifer Muckerman, Director of Brewing Operations, and Andrew Porter, head brewer of JJ's Brewing Company, they're also new to the area, and they have a mission. The restaurant chain they're associated with sells a lot of American Light lagers, and part of their job is to get their restaurant patrons to start drinking their American Light lager, and then maybe expand their horizons to more interesting beers that they make in-house. Now, a couple of notes heading into the interview. I failed to ask what lager yeast they use, and it's White Labs 840, the American lager yeast. Makes sense. Also, I didn't properly introduce Rob Pagano, who walked up midway through the interview. Rob assists with brewery operations there at JJ's. It was a great chat, and let's get into it. Jennifer Muckerman, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hello, it's wonderful to be here. And this is our head brewer at JJ's Brewing Company, Andrew Porter.
Andrew, welcome.
Nice to meet you guys.
But you go by Porter, and you go by Muck. I feel left out. I don't have a cool, nifty nickname. Maybe one will come by the end of the show here. We're here in the brewery, and where are we?
We are at JJ's Brewing Company in Fayetteville, Arkansas,
and which is connected to
The JBGB, which is a really fun adult play area and restaurant.
And this is give us some background. I mean, on the establishment, because you're connected with JJ's, right? Which is a chain of, what, eight restaurants in Arkansas? Pretty successful restaurants, bars in the area?
That is correct. The first JJ's was in Rogers, and that location really likes us because they drink a lot of beer. So we are here brewing the beer, JJ's draft beer, for the JJ's locations.
And give us some background on y'all. Porter, we'll start with you. What's your background? How did you come to brewing, and what's your experience?
Well, basically my background is I started as a home brewer. So once I turned 21, my dad bought me a kit, and the obsession took off. And basically I actually went to school for exercise science with pre-med in Ithaca College, and I was home brewing in college and everything. And once I graduated, I was like, well, I want to really do something I enjoy doing or whatever, and like really am passionate about. So after I graduated, I just tried to get into the industry, and as some homebrewers who tried to get in the industry understand, it's really difficult to get your foot into the door. And I just kept trying and trying. I looked around the New York area. I'm from Connecticut, so after I graduated, I moved back home, and I was looking in Troy, Albany area, because that's where my brother lives, to try to get my foot in the door at some brew pubs. But all the brewmasters were saying, oh, you need to go back to school. You need to go to Siebel. You need to go get your master's in fermentation. And I just couldn't get my foot in the door. And I kept looking online, and I actually got connected in a brewery in Connecticut, Stamford, Connecticut, called Half Full Brewery. And they are offering a three-month unpaid internship with Jennifer Muckerman as the brewmaster, and I jumped on that opportunity right away. And after the 3 months, I got hired was working for them for a while. And then after a while, about a year, I was told about this opportunity where she was moving down here to Fayetteville, Arkansas, and she kind of pulled me in, and I'm super excited to continue the journey.
Yeah, internships work.
They very well.
I had one in broadcasting, and I got a job. I had a resume tape, and I got a job afterwards. So working for free, if you can get an internship where you get paid, that's awesome. But
right.
You know, working for free, if you can afford it, if you can work it, it works.
Yes, yeah, so if you can afford it, definitely. And I mean, if you can afford it in Connecticut, wow, Fayetteville, it's not too bad. So, but yeah, we are. I personally love using interns and giving. Young people, and not only young people, sometimes older people, an opportunity to get into this industry. And again, it's a connection that you get to keep. I have interns all over the place now, so it's super exciting to be able to have those contacts.
Now, what's your background?
Actually, I went to school to be an airplane mechanic because that's what my father did. And upon finishing that, I thought, this is terrible. I don't want to do this. I have no interest in this. And the fellow that I had worked for from the time that I was in high school, I was a hostess at one of his restaurants. He opened a brewery in 1995, and I set my sights on brewing. So I brewed, and that was Trailhead Brewing Company in St. Charles, Missouri. So I brewed there, and then in 2010, I wanted to take my career farther, so I went to Siebel, and I graduated Siebel, and then after that, the opportunities really started coming to me. Siebel was a great place to meet connections in the industry, as well as get some great job opportunities. So from there, I went to from St. Louis, I went to Tennessee and brewed a little while. Fast forward, went to Connecticut, and worked at Half Full Brewery, got that up and running. And Connecticut was just a little expensive for me. It's hard to save money, and at my age, I need to start saving money. So started looking for other opportunities, and also wanted to move closer to home because home is St. Louis, and my father lives in St. Louis and my family. So Fayetteville, Arkansas, man, how awesome, right? My family can't just show up because it takes 4.5 hours to get here. So, you know, it's that perfect distance. I can go and see them. But when I found this opportunity here at JJ's, I found them on Pro Brewer. I wasn't sure about it. And then I came to Fayetteville, and when I got off the plane, I was like, yes, this is awesome. Really love it here. Love the area here. So once this, you know, once I decided to take this, Andrew, my last two interns were first came into my head. So, and I was really happy that Andrew took this opportunity and came down here with me.
Well, awesome. Welcome. Welcome to the area. We've got a flight of six beers here, so what should I start on?
I didn't put them in order, sorry. You should have ordered from the bartender, not me. I start with our lightest. You know, I always go lightest to darkest, so that's our light lager. It is just a light American lager. It's 4.7%, and it literally is just, you know, styled after any InBev product that you can really think of, I guess, if you could think of one. There's, that's our version. And I think we've gotten really close. It's clean and light, and we're selling quite a bit of it. So it's doing well at our restaurants.
Well, you say it's clean and light, but it's flavorful as well. It's got, you know, a nice grainy flavor, and it's not just a, you know, Alka-Pop, beverage.
Well, it's at first we were having some issues with that because that was one of the things that our customers said, that it was a little too flavorful. So how to move forward. We tried to make it a little less crafty. And that one, you know, that beer isn't, it's just meant to be a clean, light American lager. And I think that we have achieved that. It does have a little bit of flavor, a little more flavor, but it's not overpowering. I like to think of that as quite a crushable beer, right? If you're out mowing the lawn.
Oh, yeah.
So, and at the JBGB concert series, you know, people seem to think the same. So they drink quite a bit of it. So it's great. It's quite rewarding.
Now, a lot of craft brewers might turn their nose up at brewing a light American style lager, but that's kind of one of your missions, is to take some of that business over from outside companies, because y'all sell a lot of light American lagers.
That is correct, and you know, and we want to be able to compete with them, and I think that we've made a product that does compete. And our, you know, our customers are getting on board, which is great, because why not? Why not make your own beer? I mean, I think with the right equipment, which that is one thing that JJ's did. They put in, as you can see, quite a nice brewery here. They really gave us the equipment to make a clean American light lager. So
Porter. Have you had much experience with brewing lagers? I mean, did you do lagers home brewing before you came into the professional world?
Home brewing, I've been mainly ale, and obviously my last brewery, we were just doing strictly ales. So the big part of coming down here was to get into the real technical brewing, which is lagering. And Jennifer Muckerman has a lot of experience with lagering and everything, and I was like, that's something I really want to build on my resume, is understanding how to lager. And, I mean, that beer right now is at its base form right now, and we are continuing to tweak it as well as far as on the cellaring side. I know it's a little bit more difficult as far for, like, a home brewer to really be lagering, because you need to be holding all those temperatures and pressures at the correct perimeters. And, I mean, obviously, in a brewery like this, we are able to do that. But, really the technical brewing really drove me down here. And that is our flagship lager, our flagship beer. And, I mean, it's actually very exciting to brew a style like that, as far as, I mean, you can do, like, an IPA and just cover it up with as many hops as you want. But, like, brewing something where you have to be on it from start to finish, like completely monitoring it, it's a challenge. I mean, and that's exciting to do, you know.
So what are the parameters that you've got to keep an eye on during the process? What's keeping you up at night, or what's on your checklist that you've got to be sort of babysitting the beer?
Definitely the fermentation, like throughout the whole time, we need to be making sure it's at our correct temperatures, as well as after we get through the primary fermentation, we are setting it to the correct pressure. So
we're still dialing those in, you know. I mean, it really has been just the two of us in here, and it's really hard to calibrate a brand new system and be setting, you know, really intricate parameters on a beer that you have only brewed in theory before that you actually got the system, you know, just on paper. And so, you know, it's been a bit of a painful process. I mean, some of that definitely was painful. But, you know, we've been taking baby steps, you know, so we've just been going really slow. But we really keep a lot of intricate notes and, you know, a lot of graphs, Excel spreadsheets, you know, really just keeping track of all of the information, which again, just that part of it, when there's two people, makes it, you know, somewhat difficult. But I mean, it's fun, you know, but there goes the sleep at night. You don't need any of that, right? So, and I can show you any of our, you know, our sheets. You know, as you can see, we keep a binder with each style, and so as they're finished, you know, we pull the sheets off and put them in there so that you can look at all the red fermentations right next to each other and see, you know, what your cell counts were, how did it go, what generation were you on, you know. And the ale, we're using the White Labs California ale yeast, the 001, And that one, I've worked with that yeast for years and years and years. It's very forgiving. And it's very easy to chart like that. You can see, you know, we know immediately within 48 hours, you know, if we were on, completely on with our pitch, or if, next time we need to pitch a little more, or, you know. But we've also had a lot of fluctuations with myself calibrating the system, because, of course, you know, my gravities have, you know, fluctuated a little bit, you know. And we've got the silo outside that holds 48,000 pounds of the Cargill Ida pills, which is our base malt right now for all of our brews. Except for, I mean, we Porter uses quite a bit of the Golden Promise in his IPA. But that, you know, anybody that works with a silo knows as you get to the end of the silo, all of a sudden you're like, oh, my gravities are changing. And for when it's a brand new system, you know, I started tweaking things on the system. And it was like, oh, no, my silo's almost empty. I have a lot more husks than I have, you know, grain. Usually, you know, it'll start to drop a little bit. And when I'm all dialed in, I've had a silo at, you know, a few of the breweries I've worked at, and when you have it all dialed in, you're like, oh, my gravity dropped a little bit. I better go check the silo. But here I didn't know that.
Something homebrewers don't have to worry about. My silo is not nearly as big. So talk about the recipe formulation on since we don't, you know, spend a lot of time talking about brewing, you know, this style on the show. Talk about the recipe formulation. I don't want you to give away any trade secrets, but it sounds like is it a pretty simple recipe?
Oh yeah, I mean it's basically two row. I mean it's two row, and everything else that's in there is just for color and a little bit of body, which is just a little bit of special pale and some carapils. So it's a very, very simple recipe. And then, you know, Hallertau. So it's, you know, and I use Magnum quite a bit. That has Magnum as the bittering. I like Magnum as a bittering hop. I use it in actually quite a few recipes we use it in. Just because in here in this atmosphere, you know, for me, I feel like for inventory purposes and just for always keeping a fresh product open, I love to use the same ingredient in multiple brews. So that's one of the reasons.
It's a good tip for homebrewers as well. I mean, if you're... That way, also, you get to know that ingredient very well, you know. And if you're skipping across the dial as far as what you're brewing and you know what you're brewing with, you maybe don't get the familiarity, you know, with one single ingredient or recipe line. So what should we try next? Is there a recipe of yours, Porter, that you want to try?
Yeah, the recipe that's mine is the IPA. So. It is that last one, so he just went and grabbed it. Yep.
it's fooling.
So you're going to notice out of all these beers, we really are in that sessionable range, really around the 5%. Coming down here, growing up in Connecticut, I mean, you in New England, you understand that all the IPAs are just overpowering and very just like, I'm going to knock off your tongue right now with a bunch of hops and everything. So really designing this IPA, I was designing it around that kind of end of the boil hop additions, like the New England styles, but with a cleaner finish. So I just wanted to really set this around 5% so that sessionable. And, I mean, it's only at 40 IBUs. It's a little low for an IPA, but... I mean, that's what you have to do when you move from one region to another. I mean, a lot of people down here aren't used to those extremely hoppy beers. And, I mean, you have to brew your beers around their taste profiles. So it's just a simple IPA. I mean, it's about 70% base malt, 20%. I actually use that British pale malt, Golden Promise. I really like that Golden Promise malt a lot. Adds a little bit more of that breadiness flavor compared to just using the base malt that we have. And then there's a little bit of caramel 60 and caramel 40 split down the middle for color purposes, and a little bit of honey. I've noticed that with the caramel and the honey working together with the hops, you kind of get more of a juicier flavor from the hop additions. So,
you say it's fairly low in bittering, but it's balanced. I mean, because it's a lower gravity beer compared to other, you know, where 6 and 7% has become the norm for IPAs. If you were to put the same amount of hop in that beer, you'd just get blown away.
Oh, definitely, for sure. I mean, like you said, growing or being from the New England region, I'm just used to people just overpowering with hops and everything. So it was like I said, when you come down to a different region, you got to adjust to their personal taste and everything. And people down here aren't used to those overpowering IPAs and stuff.
That IPA, that first IPA, it was, you know, that's the JJ's IPA as we're doing our lineup. But, you know, we've just brewed a double IPA here that, you know, hopefully will, right? Blow people's palates, right?
So, actually, yeah.
We want to do, we want to brew them all, you know, but we got to, you know. But we're excited about the double IPA. You walked through the mess there just a few minutes ago. But I think for that IPA was really went to go into this lineup, as you can see, you know, these JJ's beers, what they look like, the colors. I mean, he dialed that in perfectly to fit in with that lineup. So we're really excited. And it's really, I mean, it's the top seller. I mean, that and the light are neck and neck as in selling. So.
And another thing about that beer is, I mean, it's an IPA, and some people are like, oh, I'm not into IPAs or anything, but this beer is very approachable, and it could be the gateway for someone to be like, all right, I want to try something different than a light lager, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So yeah, y'all have an opportunity to ease people into, you know, more interesting, more crafty, interesting beers. Talk about the hopping, because I mean there's plenty of hops in there, and the hop character is really nice, and it's a crisp beer, and there's a lot of floral characteristics, I would say, to the hops, at least at 10 o'clock in the morning. That's what I'm picking up. So talk about the hopping.
So there is actually, well, like you just said, with the floral, there's a lot of Centennial in this recipe, as well as I use Magnum, obviously. Jen talked about that earlier, so we're trying to utilize the Magnum. So I use a little bit of the Magnum at 60 minute just to get that bittering going. And then I'm just 20 minute addition. I use a lot of Centennial as well as El Dorado. And at the end at Flame Out, I use Cascade, El Dorado, and Centennial. And then we dry hop it again with El Dorado and Cascade. So a 15 barrel batch, we're dry hopping it with 22 pounds of hops. So, I mean, this, don't get me wrong, I said this is like a very, not a hop bomb, but I mean, once you start adding hops during the end of your additions, I mean, you're going to be obviously using a lot more to get the bitterness. So, I mean,
there's and a like. A lot of hops in it. Okay, our yield is, we're working on our yield, let's just say that. But yeah, it's got a lot of hops in it. Thanks, Porter.
But I mean, yeah, when we were working with our hop contract, Jen was like, well, you got to pick your one superstar hop, and El Dorado was on the board, and I really liked the El Dorado hop, so I was like, yeah, I'm taking that one. So,
of course, in Arkansas, we might be tempted to say El Dorado, because we got a town in South Arkansas called El Dorado.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe
we
should do that.
You don't have to. It's a different state up here, a different part of the state. So, Porter, where should we go next?
We should start to go in towards the wheat. So we have a wheat, and then we have a raspberry wheat. So this beer is mainly brewed just for yeast purposes. So,
I love that beer for propagating my yeast. Quite a bit. So please, people, drink more wheat.
Well, a lot of people have a wheat on tap as a gateway beer, as to, you know, to ease people into, you know, they don't have a, you know, something like an American light lager. They have the wheat as the gateway beer.
Blonde ale. We've made a lot of blonde ales.
Oh, that's tasty. It's pretty sort of basic, and you know, there's nothing fancy about it, but it's very, very clean, which is what you want. But it's interesting. Again, it's got a nice, you know, kind of grain backbone flavor to it. And again, another beer that you could drink a lot of.
Very much so. Yes, it is very plain. All it is the Ida Pils and wheat. It's got a little bit of special pale for color as well. I tried to make it so, you know, the flight looks good. I don't want them all to be the same color, right? So because you can see how clear it is. Oh, yeah. And it's unfiltered. I mean, that is not really a filter beer. Yeah, yeah, it's unfiltered. You know, we've done very well with getting those beers nice and clean and clear like that. Again, I just visually really like the way it looks. They look clean and crisp.
Yeah, so what's your secret? I mean, because I'm surprised that you said these are unfiltered, because they
not
are.
All of them, just
okay.
That one.
Oh, just the wheat.
Yeah, oh, God,
but even
no, that white lager, believe me, that's filtered. Yes, yes, yes. We have a lenticular filter. I use a lenticular filter. Oh boy, that thing put some gray hair on my head. At first, I hadn't used one before here, but now I went from really tearing my hair out to having a love-hate, and now I've moved into pretty much love. Every now and then I hate it, but it's once I learned the piece of equipment, it was amazing how much easier my life got, you know. So, yeah, but I do filter it, the light lager. I filter all of them except for the wheat and the raspberry wheat. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of seasonals, you know, that we don't filter. In fact, we have a white ale coming up behind the pumpkin that won't be filtered.
Wow, there's a lot of raspberry in this raspberry wheat. Wow, how do you get the fruit flavor?
It's fruit flavor. people really like that beer, especially girls, you know. And I'll be honest, in the beginning it was because, you know, we have 12 taps out there and we were rushing to open. And I was trying to fill 12 taps, so making the wheat, you know, making one beer and having two really helped me. So I really just did it as a stopgap solution. But then people really started drinking it, so we continued to make it. So as long as people drink it, we'll continue to make it, right?
Yeah, the fruit flavor is really fresh and not artificial at all. Our local homebrew shop sells these little, you know, natural fruit flavorings. There's no fermentables in it at all, and so you can just, you know, add it at bottling time and kind of blend in. And there's no, I don't think there's any shame or embarrassment necessary to, you know, you kind of shook your head a little bit, but.
I use one. I mean, it's TTB approved. It's clean. I'm not worried about contamination with it. And again, I mean, I did it as a stopgap solution, but it worked. So, yeah, you know, we've continued to do it. You know, and we want to do things obviously with just straightforward with fruit, like the white, you know, we used orange peel and, you know, and we're about to put even more orange peel in it, and possibly some orange. I don't know. We're going to work on that today. Shooting from the hip. A little shooting from the hip brewing, right? That's okay, too, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you bet. Rob's hanging around. He looks like he wants to get to work. But what are you working on? What do they got you doing here, Rob? Step up so I can.
He actually has a beer in there. Yeah, he's got the all.
The German all beer. I actually brewed that one there.
Right over there on our
nano system. I don't know if you saw that or not.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's mine right now. I got Hefeweizen coming up here soon. Looking to do a brown or something tomorrow.
That's nice. Talk about this recipe.
There's not really
much to talk
about. There's really not much in it. It's a nice basic, just Ida Pils. What else did we put in there?
Special B, caramels, 40, and flaked wheat.
Yeah, flaked wheat, that was it. Yeah, so really not much going on. It's not too hoppy or anything. Nice, good flavor on it. I've gotten really good feedback on it. That was my second batch of it, so it turned out good.
It's got kind of a subtle caramel characteristic to it. And what's the yeast?
The yeast is...
House ale.
Yeah, the house ale
yeast.
Cool. I know a lot of home brewers use that German, the Kolsch yeast for when they're brewing an alt like that. And a lot of home brewers actually brew alts just because it's easier kind of. I kind of understand alt beer kind of as like a hybrid. It's kind of, it is an ale, but I mean, when you start fermenting it at a little bit of colder temperature, you kind of get more of like that lager taste. So
how low can you go with the 001, the California yeast?
We can bring the 001 down to, we haven't gone any lower than 66.
We haven't with any of these recipes. It's not saying that we won't, you know, but not.
That's finer tweaking. I mean as professional brewers, you want to be fermenting at higher temperatures because that means you're getting the beer out quicker, you know, but not necessarily quicker as in like rushing it, but I mean, it's moving faster. I mean, everyone knows what the slower or lower temperature fermenting is going to have the beer lag a little bit longer. So.
Yeah, you've got to get beer out the door. I mean, you know, and make sure that it's good beer. But, you know, with those production constraints, you don't have time to be fussy a lot of the time. So.
Yeah, I mean, we're just looking to put out a good product. And we are looking to put it out as quickly as we can. But, again, without rushing it or putting out green beer.
So what am I drinking here?
That is the red ale. So that is the JJ's Red Ale. So we were looking for something, you know, because it's down here in Arkansas, right? We were trying to, that one was really designed around the color. I mean, it was, you know, just trying to dial in a nice bright red. I think we did that, you know, it's malty. You'd be surprised at how much hops is in that.
I was going to say it's a little hoppy, especially coming off the alt beer, which is not as hoppy a style. But the red, yeah, it's a little more, it's got an interesting hop character. How did you get the red color?
With the Cargill Munich 10. It's got quite a bit of Cargill Munich 10 in it, and that is just a nice, pretty red. And then it's got quite a bit of Centennial in it. That's what you're picking up, Centennial and Magnum.
That's delicious. All these beers are nice and clean. And, you know, I could drink them all day long. And that's part of, I guess, your reason for being here is you're making beers. You're not making, or I guess you will with the double IPA and things like that.
Sure.
Some seasonal things.
Seasonal beers,
you can have a couple of beers on tap that are, you know, where the beer geeks can come in and contemplate what they're drinking and appreciate them, you know, for what they are, you know, and write down tasting notes and untapped and everything. But yeah, all of these are delicious. Now we're coming up to the end here. This is a lot of people might be tempted to switch channels when I say this next word, but it says pumpkin on it.
It does.
So which, you know, that's one of the more polarizing, that and New England IPAs are probably the two most polarizing beer styles. I haven't tasted it yet. It looks delicious, but what am I getting in here, Porter?
You're getting, once again, a lot of base malt. I mean, as you've listened to this podcast, I mean, we like to keep our recipes pretty simple and then really dial in everything on the fermentation side. This is actually Jen's bread and butter right here, so I would rather have her talk about her prize beer, you know.
I will say up front that I am not a pumpkin ale fan, and I'm not a particular a large fan of that. I think it's a good representation. I try to make a good beer even when it's not a style that I particularly care for, and that is not a style that I particularly care for, but it has always sold well, you know, at this type of place. It did very well at Trailhead. In fact, I think they still do a countdown to pumpkin. You know, they have, you know, I mean, people really like it. So here I tried to step it up. This one is actually, it turned out 6.1%. I would like it to be 8%. But it was the first seasonal that I brewed on this system. And boy, I really pushed the system to the limit there with that. So we'll see what happens next year as I'm more dialed in.
It's delicious. And I don't give effusive compliments easily. You know, if I come across a beer that I don't care for, I'll say, oh, that's interesting. But
I think we say it tastes artful.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that doesn't even exist, you know.
I've never tasted anything quite like this.
right, yeah, we've all done it.
But this is, it's very nice. It's, the thing that I think people don't like about pumpkin beers is that it may be like you're drinking a glass of potpourri.
Oh, yeah.
Or something. You know, it's just too much spice. This one, I don't know what you haven't said what you did to make it, but I swear that there's, in addition to, there is a pumpkin flavor in there, and maybe it's my mind playing tricks on me, but there's a pumpkin flavor in there, and it's just, if you follow the recipe on the Libby's can for the, which is mom's recipe, you know, that she always used, it's that level of spice. And I swear to God that there's crust in there. I swear, and maybe it's my brain playing tricks on me, but I swear that I taste crust.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's pretty basic grain bill. It does have pumpkin in it, but we put pumpkin in the mash. And, you know, that has quite a bit of special pale in it, which I like that biscuit flavor, you know, kind of puts that little bit in there. But then we make a tea out of cinnamon and nutmeg and add that to the bright tank as we move it over. And that's one. So, I mean, for me, I feel like you can control your spices that way, you know, because, and, you know, we always go by the, you can add more, but you can't get it back out. So, you know, we'll a lot of times do things in steps and then stop and see where we're at and then continue. So, yeah, that it's actually a very, the brew day is not fun, let's say. I have to put quite a bit of rice hulls into the mash to get it to not stick because there's quite a bit of pumpkin in it.
And what kind of pumpkin? How do you treat the pumpkin?
Canned pumpkin.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I don't.
Don't be embarrassed about things at work.
I mean, it's canned pumpkin. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to sound like a lazy brewer, but it's really much easier to deal with something that's already, it's very consistent. You know, every single year that product is going to be consistent and you're going to get the same ingredient every year. And so it just, for a consistent product, and for being able to make the same beer over and over and over again, you know, I like to source my ingredients that way. And now, finally being back at a brewery that, you know, where I have ties to a restaurant, I can really get, you know, when it comes into these food products, I can get a lot of consistent product, you know, and it's nice.
Yeah, you say lazy, I say practical. You know, there's some stuff that I do, it's like, man, this is easy. But it works, and if it's consistent, it comes out with a delicious beer. It's not lazy; it's practical.
Yeah, you know, do it. You know, I mean, I just figure try it. And yeah, if it works, keep doing it. And we both are real big on if it's not broke, don't try to fix it. It's if it's working, you know. I know because as a brewer, I know he's the same way. I just constantly want to tweak, but being in a startup like this. Once you get something that's working, there's so many other things to tweak. You just change direction really quickly. I don't look at it anymore. It's finished. So the pumpkin recipe is finished here. That's what we're going to stick with that one. So
now I see the pilot system over there, and it's a one barrel system. So I've read somewhere or heard a rumor that you were thinking about like doing some like home batches with local home brewers,
yes,
or something like that.
We would love to do that, really would, and you know, want to. And in fact, I can think of a couple of home brewers right off the top locally that I would love to come in and have them brew with us. But it's been a time issue more than anything this year. We just really haven't had the time. And now that we've got a third guy in here that we've got, you know, that's pretty trained over there, I mean, he still wants to do some more batches and get a little more comfortable on that before we bring somebody else in, but that'll make it a lot easier. That system's actually also set up. I was able to weasel in the beginning when this building was just on paper. That will actually wheel outside, and we can brew outside with it over there. So, you know, I was thinking, you know, hopefully when we do a beer festival here, you know, we can bring it outside and have home brewers come and brew on it. But hopefully next year, we'll start that early next year.
Well, cool. Yeah, that'd be cool to roll that out on the patio and say, you know, here's here's the process, and have people as they're playing ping pong and beach volleyball and all the we haven't talked about, I guess, about the playground that's outside that is pretty amazing. You know, this is quite the concept here. You know, I've driven, this is the first time I've been here, but I've driven by when it's just rocking and rolling and people are just, you know, it's a popular place. So congratulations. You're a part of that.
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much. And Porter and I got to actually watch this, you know, from nothing but a field grow into this. And, you know, sometimes it's hard even when you're looking at drawings to visualize what it's going to be like. And I have to say, it's turned out more awesome than I anticipated. So, and everyone down here is so nice. The customers are nice. It seems like people really enjoy themselves here. So we're really happy that they're enjoying the beer. And I couldn't be happier with working here. We wish more people would ask for tours.
Yeah, definitely.
It's strange. Nobody asks for tours. I mean, not really. Very few.
Whenever we're in the brewery, and if you knock on the door, I mean, we'll show you around in here and what's going on, what we're doing. Because I mean, a lot of people are excited about breweries, and I mean, I feel like a lot of people haven't really wanted to come in here just because it's a little intimidating, but... we're friendly. We don't bite, you know. So.
Well, it's a production space. I mean, you know, there's a lot of stainless steel and things like that, and people, you know, it can be intimidating if you don't know what's going on. But you guys are talented and nice folks, and I hope that you know, the people who live here in Northwest Arkansas listen to this and coming through. We'll take you up on that suggestion. You may regret it.
No, we really won't. I mean, again, it's another way for us, you know. I mean, I love to meet people that are passionate about beer. I mean, we really are passionate about beer, and we absolutely love doing this and love talking about it. And you'll see as you have to cut us off on this, as we just ramble on and on and on and on, 3-hour show.
You're like, oh, we actually got to do work today, right?
Yeah. Well, there are worse ways to start off a Monday morning, right?
Yeah,
sure. No, believe me. Yeah, we've started them that way, too.
Oh, yeah. So.
Well, thank you all very much.
Thank you, James. Yeah. I guess you can't see. I'm shaking his hand.
Yeah. Credit. Credit for the handshake.
Right.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again to Muck, Porter, and Rob. I didn't get a new nickname. Maybe that's a good thing. There's always a possibility it might not be flattering. Muck says the white ale that you talked about and the double IPA will be on tap soon there at JJ's. So, man, I'm looking forward to trying those. Good folks. I had a good time talking to them. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. And let us know what bonus content you'd be interested in seeing or reading on a regular basis as a reward for subscribing financially. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. You can get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo. You can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our logbooks where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all that out at basicbrewingshop.com. And don't forget you can join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine. Why can't I say Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com? Those still work. Those are good folks. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.